You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the American League West. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com. After all the offseason flurry of moves and after spring training, these five teams are ready to go. Five teams that have playoff aspirations or contending aspirations. We'll talk to our five correspondents today.
Joined again by Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Angels for MLB.com. And so, Alden, big picture look, this is a team that won 98 games. As I look at them, you know, it's funny how we've done these podcasts the last few weeks, and we barely talked about Josh Hamilton because it looks like the Angels are so deep, the rotation is so good, the bullpen is good, the manager is one of the best of his generation, that this is a team that is poised to make a run at the World Series, and anything less than that would be disappointing. Can you just give us the overview of on the opening day look at the 2015 Angels?
I mean, I think the Angels look really strong. You look at the rotation right now. I think the rotation is deeper than it's been in quite some time, and I think the biggest thing for the Angels this year is that they're going into a season with a deep bullpen and a reliable back end of the bullpen that Mike Socha really hasn't had in a few years. If you talk to Mike Socha about this team and about what it's going to take to win and why they were finally able to get over the hump and win 98 games this year, the one thing that he'll continue to point at is that bullpen. I mean, there were so many times over the last three or four years where there were leads that they had in the eighth and ninth inning and they just couldn't get it done, you know, and I think you saw the Angels' season turn around dramatically when Joe Smith entered the closer's role in relief of Ernie Frieri midseason, and then Houston Street came on board and really solidified that bullpen depth. The fact that they're going to go into the year with Joe Smith and Houston Street pitching the eighth and ninth inning, two of the most reliable back-end bullpen arms in baseball, I think that's their biggest reason for optimism this year because they just haven't had that in a while. And look, they still have Garrett Richards. They have Jared Weaver. They have Mike Trout. They have Albert Pujols. You know, I think they're good in every department of a roster. But the back end of the bullpen, the thing that we actually haven't talked about as much, I think that's their biggest reason for optimism going into the year.
And Mike Trout is the reigning American League Most Valuable Player. And before that, he finished second 2 years in a row, won Rookie of the Year, won Silver Slugger. And pretty much, I think, if you took a vote of baseball people, 99% of them would say this is the best player on earth. He is 23 years old. You have seen him since day one in the big leagues. Tell people the thing that has impressed you the most about Mike Trout as you've watched him go from a guy who struggled in his first time up to a guy who's setting standards that, you know, is the gold standard for a baseball player now.
Well, I mean, I think you could look at Mike Trout in two different aspects. You could look at him in the on-field aspect, and you could look at him in the off-field aspect. And I think both of them are equally impressive. And I'll start with the on-field. The separator with Mike Trout is his speed, obviously. The fact that he's an amazing hitter with great strike zone recognition, with great power to all fields, and he has Gold Glove caliber defense, that's one thing. You know, there are a few players who have that. But the fact that he's as fast as he is, I think that's what kind of puts him over the top. You know, you talk to Angels players, you talk to players throughout baseball. The one thing that they are surprised at the first time they get an up-close look at Mike Trout, or the first time that they play with him is, I can't believe he's this fast. Because you see the power numbers. You see the way that he drives the ball. You see every tool imaginable. And then you see how big he is. And then you see him run down the first base line or cut around the corner. And nobody can really believe how fast the guy is. So his skill set is off the charts. I don't think that his first 3 years, I mean, they're almost unprecedented what he's done in his first three full seasons. And it's funny because, I mean, I think the biggest indicator of how good he's been is the fact that he was the youngest unanimous MVP in baseball history, and people say that was his worst year yet. You know, because the strikeouts went up, the batting, which caused the batting average to dip a little bit, and the stolen bases were down. And everybody is going to focus on those two numbers going into the year with Mike Trout simply because there's really nothing else that you could nitpick at. They're wondering if he's going to get strikeouts down. They're wondering if he's going to steal more bases again. I'll tell you this. I don't know if Mike Trout's going to steal that many more bases. I don't know that he's going to get back to being 30, 40 stolen base a year guy, simply because guys watch him closely. Albert Pujols is sitting behind him. And I feel like a lot of people in the organization, and a lot of people outside baseball too, they feel like just the wear and tear that comes with continually stealing bases, it's just not worth it. For somebody like Mike Trout, we saw a lot of great players show flashes of 30-30 skill sets early in their careers, and then eventually they merged into more of the power game. Barry Bonds is one example. Willie Mays was one example. I'm not so sure if the stolen base number is going to go up, but I think the one thing that everybody in the organization and everybody that I talked to outside of baseball realizes is that, look, Mike Trout is not a 184 strikeout guy. His swing is too short and compact. He's too disciplined. He doesn't really chase very often. He just kind of got exposed last year to that high fastball. He ran a little bit too many deep counts, and they just started him out little by little. I don't think he's ever going to be 60 strikeout a year guy like Albert Pujols. I mean, there's been very few of him who have the power and that strikeout total. But I think this is the year that you're going to see that strikeout total come back down to normal, somewhere in the 100 range. And, you know, and I think what his teammates are most impressed about with Mike Trout is that he's still the same guy. He's a really smart instinctual baseball player, but I think one of his best traits is that he keeps things so simple. He never really gets bogged down by all the demands, all the outside pressures, all the fans chasing him around everywhere he goes, begging for autographs, everybody looking at him as the face of baseball. He doesn't really get caught up in any of the hype. And I think, you know, I talked to Houston Street about him, and, you know, Houston Street's as well-spoken as there is, and he had the perfect description of Mike Trout. He said, Mike Trout is like the 12-year-old Little League guy who's the best in Little League, but he's still trying to get to the big leagues. That's how he sees Mike Trout now. He knows that he's good, but he's always chasing something, always chasing something. And I think that's the best quality about Mike Trout, and that's why he hasn't really let the expectations get him down, because he still thinks that he could get better. He still comes out here and tries to get better every single day.
Yeah, and, you know, he's one of those guys, I don't know how many there are, that if you're channel surfing, he's up, you're going to stop. If he's coming to your town, you're going to take your kid and say, son, you want to go see this player. Let me ask you about another part of the Angels, and probably the strength. Weaver, Richards, Wilson, Shoemaker, Santiago, that's their starting rotation. What adjustments, is there any red flag there? Is it as good as it appears to be, given that Weaver has certainly made the middle-age adjustment and CJ's trying to make it?
There are holes, and, you know, Richard, we talked about it before. I think there's a lot of potential in this rotation, but I think there are also question marks. I don't know if the question marks are so much with Jared Weaver, because, as you said, velocity doesn't matter to him. He's proven time and time again that he doesn't need velocity. He's got great deception, and he's just a really smart pitcher. He knows how to put pitches together. But look, yeah, CJ Wilson, for 4 out of the last 5 years, he's been a really good starting pitcher. But he's coming off his worst year as a starting pitcher, and that just so happened to be last year. Garrett Richards has the stuff to be an ace-caliber starter on any rotation, but he's coming off major knee surgery. Matt Shoemaker finished second in American League Rookie of the Year voting last year, but people keep wondering what it's going to be like for him now. League gets to know him a little better. He was, you know, a 28-year-old rookie who was in the 50th round. And, you know, people are always shocked when guys like these come out, and they wonder if he can do that again, because nobody ever projected what he did in 2014. And Hector Santiago is a guy who's, you know, he's perpetually erratic. He lives with a high walk rate, but he's also got some really good stuff. So you look at every single spot in that rotation, and, you know, there's the ability for a pretty good staff here, you know. But, you know, there's also some question marks. And I think the good thing with the Angels going into this year is they do have depth. Acquiring Andrew Heaney, acquiring Nick Tropiano in the offseason, now they have a bit of a cushion. Now they don't need every single one of those 5 starters to hit, and now they're not bracing themselves in case they have an injury. They have that organizational depth. They have the young guys coming up through the system, and I think that's the big difference maker for them this year.
Alvin, do you think they should be favored to win the American League West? In your mind, are they the favorite?
I hate to put it that way. They won 98 games last year, and they were second in run differential. you know, it was no fluke, and I think they got most of their core back. They don't have Howie Kendrick, and they don't have Josh Hamilton. So there are question marks there. They did lose some guys. But I think their lineup is going to be maybe not as dynamic as it was last year, but I think it's still going to be pretty good. I think their bullpen going into the year is as good as it's been in a long time here, at least since I've been covering them over the last 4 years. And I think the rotation, like we just talked about, is going to be fine. But having said that, the Mariners are really good. The Mariners have a really great starting rotation. I think Nelson Cruz was that missing piece to hit in the middle of the order and protect Robinson Cano. That's kind of the one thing that they needed. And surprisingly, their bullpen was really effective last year. You know, I'd give a slight edge to the Angels, but I really feel like the Angels and Mariners are going to be going head-to-head all year, and I think it's going to be a really interesting race. And I don't know if you can count out the A's either, because they always just find a way.
And the best thing is they start playing each other, and we get to overhype the hell out of it, and I just love it. All right, Alan, thank you again. Great stuff as always.
Jay, in the midst of the winter, in November, December, when you saw Billy Beane start to just take apart the club apart, did you think, okay, he wants to take a step back, or did you trust him enough and have seen him do this magic enough that you thought, okay, let's just let all the pieces fall into place before making a judgment on what Billy's up to this time?
Yeah, it was definitely more the latter, because you've seen him do this a lot before. Maybe not to this extreme, aside from after, you know, the 2011 season, but you know, you can never judge one move. You have to wait to see what comes next. And as we saw, there wasn't just one move that came after the Donaldson trade. There were several. And you know, and I understand why fans were frustrated and confused. I would probably be too if, you know, I was in their position, but just knowing the way this front office works and knowing that, you know, they never bow down and say, okay, you know, we're going to take a year or two off, rebuild, put the pieces back together and hope we can contend in a couple years. They just don't work that way. They're too competitive. You know, they figure, you know, we're in the big leagues. Why sit back ever? You know, we're going to contend. And so they, you know, they took a step back and they assessed the situation and realized that their team was in a decline. I think fans saw that, and, you know, even though, you know, they saw that, they saw Josh Donaldson, they saw Brandon Moss, you know, they saw Jeff Samardzija, they saw all these pieces that they're thinking, well, why would you ever let them go? Except they were part of a roster that just kind of collapsed there in the second half, and the A's didn't want to wait to see if, you know, it would decline even more this year. So they you know, really got ahead of it and took action. And I think now we're seeing, you know, that what they did kind of makes sense now. And the pieces that they have will not only help them this year, but, you know, years down the road.
And Jane, Billy Beane is not like other Beans. He's proud of that fact and changed the game in a lot of ways. But in this latest reconstruction of the Oakland A's, is there anything you learned about Billy that you didn't know before? And when people ask you, hey, what's this guy like? What is it that you tell them, this guy who's behind everything the A's have done?
I mean, you ask anyone and, you know, they will say how smart of a guy he is. I mean, you wouldn't believe the number of speaking engagements, you know, he's asked to be a part of every week, every month. He does several a month, you know, speaking to businesses, you know, leadership conferences, because he's not just, you know, a great ambassador of the game for what he's done and, you know, the growing legacy he's created for himself in baseball, but he's just a really smart businessman. And I think you're seeing a lot of those pop up over baseball now. Obviously in several organizations like the Dodgers. And Bean has kind of always been at the forefront of that. And so you can never really, you know, when he's making decisions, you have to just assume, okay, he probably knows what he's doing. And, you know, even people below him may may wonder at the time, but they kind of just shut it off like, you know what, let him do what he does and we'll trust it in the end. And usually you realize, you know, why they do. So he's not going to, you know, be showing his face as much as other GMs in the game, but I mean, he's always in the background doing something and really one of the smarter people I've ever come across.
And Jane, it seems like from the outside looking in that Bob Melvin might be the perfect manager for Billy in that he doesn't care who gets the credit. He's okay with the GM being the face of the franchise, but he just sees his role as trying to make the mixture of players he's given work. And obviously, I think you and I both are big fans of Bob Melvin. Why has he been a good fit for the A's?
I think it's just his, you know, his demeanor, his personality. You know, it's not an easy job working under, you know, a front office led by Billy Beane. And I know before Melvin came in, you know, some of the managers were maybe seen as puppets in a way. But I think Melvin is so respected, not only by Beane, but, you know, by everyone around the game. You know, he does have a lot of input into decisions, and I think there's a mutual respect between, you know, Billy and Melvin, which is really, really important. And, you know, Melvin, you know, as I mentioned before, how just intelligent Billy is, Melvin's also very, very smart. And, you know, I think he's always been a student of the game, even when he was, you know, playing himself. And that just, I think, that kind of feeds off on players and just his demeanor too. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, is as laid back and calm as he is. You saw in the second half last year, he never flinched. You know, it's not like we saw him kind of lose control and let things spiral. He, you know, stayed the course, and I think players see that. And I don't know that I've ever, you know, I haven't been around as long as a lot of other people, but the way these players respect him is, it seems like it's almost unmatched. I mean, they love him. They want to play well for him, you know, because there's just that respect.
And when everything is said and done, they have an impact player at third in Brett Lowry, an impact player at second in Ben Zobrist. Ike Davis has had a great spring. Billy Butler has had a very productive career. The outfield remains largely unchanged. And there's all kinds of pitching depth that they didn't have before. As you look at the A's, how good are they?
You know what? I was a little skeptical heading into spring, but seeing them together, you know, I would not be surprised, you know, if they contend. They're going to contend. Whether they can win the division, you know, that's not just going to be on them. Obviously, there's other teams in that division that are very, very good. You know, the Angels, of course, will be right in there. And the Mariners, too, are expected to be much better this year. So whether they can hang with them, I think they will most of the way just because of that strong pitching they have. And, you know, they're gonna score runs. So the key for them, though, is just scoring quickly. They can't sit back and wait on that late-inning home run that they have in recent years. You know, we saw them celebrate so many walk-offs these last couple years, and it's because they, you know, they had that power. They could, you know, hope for that eighth or ninth inning home run. And this year, they don't have, you know, the makeup of roster to do that. They do have to score early and often. And if they can do that, you know, their pitching obviously is going to keep them in the game. And once they hand it over to the bullpen, you know, it's a safe bet that they can keep that lead and get those wins. So I think they're going to be good in relation to the division. It just kind of remains to be seen.
All right. Well, we're off and running here in another season. And thank you, Jenny. Thanks for great stuff as always. We'll talk to you soon. I'm joined by Greg Johns of MLB.com with our season preview of the Seattle Mariners. You know, Greg, if you take two steps back and look at it, it's almost like this is the blueprint for building a franchise. You build up the farm system, which Jack Cerenzik did. You spend some money, Robinson Cano. Then you figure out what you need, and you go out and you get Seth Smith, and you get Jay Happ, and you get Logan Morrison. It looks like
it looks like, it just feels like, and then you hire Lloyd McClendon, a guy respected throughout the game for his leadership and his judgment. It just looks like the time is now for the Mariners. And I know, you know, Lloyd preaches to those guys, you got to win game one before you win game 100. But how do you see it from a big picture standpoint? Are you as optimistic as I am?
Well, sure. You can't be around this club without being optimistic, and I guess that there's always, you know, that raises red flags sometimes. You know, when the bar is set so high, you know, sometimes expectations don't come apart. But you know, they've embraced it. This is a team that's enjoying being looked at as contender. I think there's a burning desire to get that next step. You know, it starts with Felix Hernandez, is a guy who's pitched his career in Seattle and would love nothing more than to be on the mound for postseason play in Safeco Field. It's just the one thing in his career that's really sitting there, that big carrot. And he's got some guys around him, Nelson Cruz they brought in. This guy's been in a lot of playoff games. And when he came to Seattle, the first thing he said was, I want to be in the postseason. This is why I'm here. I want to help this team get there. Robinson Cano, obviously, with his history, knows what it means and how to get there. And those guys are kind of the leaders, the group in there that's trying to pull that young squad together. And there is a lot of pieces, as you say, that seem to be fitting right. This is a team with good depth, good pitching, and their offense seems to be on the right track here with the 1-9 lineup that's much improved. And a lot of that comes to putting Nelson Cruz right in the middle of that thing. And my interest is going to be to see that Cruz batting behind Robinson Cano and see what difference that makes. The left-right-left combination of Cano, Cruz, and Seager really changes the equation for a lot of things. Opposing managers are going to have to think about how the late innings match up with that group. It's a different feeling in Seattle, and certainly that's why the excitement is here.
Yeah, and, you know, Greg, this begins with the fact that the Mariners had the good judgment to go out and put a guy in charge of the baseball operations, who was a talent evaluator, who did great drafts in Milwaukee and knows how everything begins with the fact that they assembled a foundation in guys like Seager and Zanino and Miller and just built from the ground up. And also they're in a place that they're positioned to sustain the success now that they've won 87 games in the season. What is the most impressive thing about the job Jack Sierenjic has done from where you sit?
Well, I think, as you mentioned, it's really being patient enough to wait and see when the right time is to add the right pieces. It's hard in this game, as you know. I mean, you want to put it all together at the right time and to wait. The big signing, the Robinson Cano, I think really changed things. And now to go out and add Nelson Cruz to that, they're putting the pieces in at the right time with that young group really hitting there, kind of all merging together in a nice perfect storm. So, I mean, we'll see how it plays out in the field, but you certainly like the young group. Kyle Seager, he's part of the foundation. Mike Zanino, part of the foundation. Felix, obviously, the pitching staff is ready now. Paxton, Walker, I mean, these are young, talented kids. They're just ready to go, and it's going to be fun. I mean, you mix in the veteran presence, and they've really, and that was a big thing for McClendon this year. He wanted some veteran players, some real guys that have been there. The Nelson Cruzes, the Ricky Weeks, Seth Smith, J.A. Happ's pitching the World Series. I mean, these guys with good background, put it all together. It's a pretty interesting mix. When that 25 rolls out, it's going to be a pretty good 25-man group that starts the season.
And so he brings in Lloyd McClendon a year ago to run it, and I think you and I would agree. His presence, his judgment, his honesty with players, he's, in a lot of ways, he is a Jim Leland clone in all the best sense of that word. Would you just address what you see in Lloyd McClendon that has most impressed you?
I think the thing that strikes everyone with Lloyd is his directness and his honesty. When he speaks, there's no misunderstanding. even with the media, you know, a lot of managers, they kind of beat around the bush. Or it's tough for them to say what they – Lloyd, when he's talking, he's telling you what he thinks, and that may change. It may change in a week, and he may go, well, you know, it's different today. But when he's telling you something, and it's what he's thinking, and with the players, they like that. I mean, they want to know what's expected. They want to know what the manager's thinking. They don't want to have to worry about things. You know, is he thinking this? Is he thinking that? No, he's gonna tell you. He's gonna bring you into the office, tell you what's expected, and he's gonna have your back until you disappoint him in some way, and then he's gonna let you know what's disappointed him. So, you know, that kind of I've seen it this last year. I've seen it this spring. Guys enjoy playing for him. They feel like he's got their back, and that goes a long way with the team. And you know, the veterans respect him certainly. The youngsters, I think, you know. Maybe a little bit scared of him, just in the right way. I mean, a good manager has that little fear, that little respect. You know, we had Lou Pinnell here for years, and saw what that meant. You know, sometimes you want guys to when you walk in the room to know you're there. And Lloyd certainly brings that presence. And I think this is a good fit and a good group for him.
So Felix and Seager and Cano and Morrison and Jackson, it's a pretty good thing. It looks like a good thing to get going in Seattle. Enjoy the ride, Greg. Happy opening day to you. We'll talk to you soon.
Joined by Brian McTaggart of MLB.com. And we're going to look at the 2015 Astros. Big changes in the offseason, Brian. Let's start at the top with A.J. Hinch. What have you seen? What have you been impressed by? How is he different?
Well, he's been very, very impressive. We'll see what kind of manager he is. But just from day one, just the communication and the openness, he pulled all the players aside as soon as they came in and said, here's your role, here's what you have to do to make the team. And anytime a player has a question about what he has to do, he can go in and the manager will tell him. He's a straight shooter. But they've had a lot of fun, too. He had a basketball contest where they all shot baskets and the players loved it. But, you know, we'll see what kind of manager he is on the field. But, you know, I think so far, just with the positive energy and the communication, and you know, it wasn't that long ago he was a player, and I think he knows what a lot of these guys are going through coming to camp, trying to see salvage careers, trying to see if they can make teams. So he's sensitive to that as well.
And just from the outside looking in, it looks like the coaching staff, smart, innovative. You got some experienced guys like Richie Dower, Brent Strom, the pitching coach, very innovative guy. You've been impressed with what you've seen of the pitching coach?
Yeah, Strom, I think, has done a great job the last couple of years. He's the only – he and his Craig Bjornsson, his assistant, are the only coaches that came back, and for good reason. I mean, look at the work they did with Dallas Keuchel and Colin McHugh. I think Brent Strom is a big reason because of their success. But, yeah, Gary Pettis obviously has had a great career and stole a lot of bases. So they have some guys that can run. Marisnik can run. VR can run Altuve. So he's going to be invaluable on those guys. Dave Hudgens coming over for the Mets seems to have struck up a good rapport with the guys. So it is a good veteran coaching staff.
You know, and one of the things Jeff Luhnow did was he traded some prospects, these prize prospects he'd worked so hard to build a farm system with, to get veteran guys like Gattis and who else? Oh, and they go out and they sign the two relievers and they sign Rasmus. Do you think trading prospects means that the Astros are in a different place, that Jeff feels it is time or it is possible to take a step up?
Yeah, I think definitely for the first couple of years he was on the job, it was trading veterans for prospects, and they dealt off pretty much everybody, and we all know what happened, and the farm system got better. And now that the farm system is probably top five or six, now they are starting to deal away. So they've dealt away some impressive arms. Trapiano, they dealt away Jared Kosar, so they haven't been shy about dealing away some of their pitching depth. But, yeah, the times have changed. The ship has turned a little bit. It's time to build on 70 wins last year. I know a lot of teams would be disappointed with 70, but when you come from 51 and you go to 70, that's a big step. So they want to take another step. They opened up the wallets a little bit. The payroll is going to be about $70 million. So those two things combined, I think, shows a commitment that they're ready to start winning.
As you look at the club, what's the strength of the Astros right now?
Well, I have to say their bullpen. And we really, you don't
get
to see.
That's ironic. That's weird to say.
Yeah, they've had one of the worst bullpens the last few years, but they went out and put money in it. Qualls is back. Qualls did a nice job as closer last year, just when he wasn't facing the A's. But adding Gregerson and Neshek, and even a guy like Joe Thatcher, all of a sudden you have a veteran bullpen that could have a chance to be really good. They're going to hit a lot. They're going to have a lot of power. I think they have a chance to lead the American League in home runs. So, but I think the bullpen is going to make a big difference because they blew a lot of saves the last few years.
Yeah, and obviously the offense is going to be much different with Rasmus, with Gattis, with Carter for a full season, with Jed Lowry. Good offense?
Yeah, I think real good. They're going to strike out a lot, but A.J. Hinch said, you know, strike out at the right time. Don't strike out when we need you. We need to move a runner or if we have runners in scoring position. But the thing about the offense, it's going to be deep. It's going to start with Altuve. Springer comes right at you at the number two hole. Then you're going to have some thumpers in Carter and Gattis and Rasmus. And then Jason Castro's had a really nice spring. People forget about him. He was an all-star a couple of years ago. He could hit six or seven. Jed Lowry, a switch hitter, hitting six or seven. So you're going to have a deep lineup, a very dangerous lineup. If Chris Carter can cut down on the strikeouts again and be the Chris Carter we saw for 2 months last year when he was kind of one of the most feared sluggers in the game, then I think you have a really, really good lineup.
You know, and one of the things Jeff Luhnow did was he kind of made the roster a revolving door to try to find players. And so in Keuchel, in McHugh, who else help me here, in guys that have emerged as players, certainly Altuve emerged as a star player. It's sort of like you can't do it all through these high draft picks. You have to go out and find, trust your baseball people, and they've done that.
Yeah, McHugh was a waiver claim. Keuchel was in the system. They claim Will Harris, who could be in the bullpen off waivers. Yeah, if you look at the construction of the roster, it's going to be some drafted guys, but mostly it's going to be guys that they've picked up on trades or off waivers. And they haven't been shy about claiming guys off waivers and giving them a shot. We've seen that with several guys.
Fans want a good team, but yep, they want an interesting team too. And it looks just, obviously, Altuve is, to me, one of the most fun players to watch. But Springer has star written all over him. The way he carries himself, the talent, all the stuff. He kind of gets it all the way across, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a complete deal. And he cares. He cares about his teammates. I think if they lose a game, if this thing gets going and they're playing in September and they lose a tight game, I think George Springer's going to take it harder than anybody. He's going to be the guy we're all going to go to, and you know how gut wrenching was that loss. But he does have star written all over him. And man, if he could stay healthy, and with the numbers he put up last year, in just half a season he hit 20 home runs. That was coming up to the majors and struggling for 2 weeks when he looked lost. So I think that experience last year, he's more comfortable now. I think if he stays healthy, I think he could be an all-star, and I think he could have a monster season.
Thanks, Brian.
Joined by T.R. Sullivan of MLB.com, who covers the Rangers. It's been a hellish 12 months for the Rangers, T.R., now as we go into opening day. Have expectations been lowered, given all that's happened in the last year, given the injury to Yu Darvish? How have expectations changed for John Daniels' ownership, et cetera?
The Rangers still think they can contend, Richard. They still believe that this team is good enough to compete in the American League West. I think, obviously, other people's expectations are much lower. The Rangers are not considered to be the favorites by anybody. So they're back into a situation where they were 5 or 6 years ago where people are overlooking them. Now, they may have good reason to, given what's happened to Yu Darvish, given what's happened to last year. The Rangers believe they have a contending team. Their pitching is good enough. And if Prince Fielder, as we talked about last week, he's the big key on this team. If this guy has a big year in the middle of that order, he can really make this offense go, and they'll have enough pitching to contend.
Jeff Banister getting his first chance to manage in the big leagues after serving as Clint Hurdle's right-hand guy in Pittsburgh and a long career in the minor leagues. A Texas native. What have you been impressed about watching Jeff Banister do his thing here in this first spring?
Very straightforward, very honest, good baseball man, good career resume. They've run a good camp. Things have run smoothly, even given with the injuries to, you know, Darvish and, you know, Shinsu too had some arm issues in camp. Overall, it's been a well-run camp. So everything has gone smoothly as far as the transition to the new manager, very well respected in the clubhouse. Of course, the bell hasn't rung yet. We got a few days to go before, you know, the season starts. And, you know, he manages his first game for real and has to make all the moves based on winning the game and not getting the team ready for the season. So that'll be a little different. But so far in spring training, he has been impressive with everybody, just his demeanor, his preparation, and his leadership has been very, very solid.
Speaking of leaders, Adrian Beltre is the third baseman. I look at the infield of Beltre, Andrus, Odor at second, Prince at first. I think this infield is as good as any in baseball. How would you look at it? And I know what you're going to say, if Prince is on the field, I agree with that. But let's just presume they're healthy. How good is this infield?
Well, like we talked about last week, Richard, Elvis Andrus is, you know, very solid at shortstop. He's coming to camp, you know, really positive, you know, feeling a lot better about himself and a lot more prepared for the season than last year. Adrian Beltre is Adrian Beltre. You know, he's one of the best third basemen of all time, solid defender, dangerous at the plate, a little bit older, you know, always a question mark how much he's going to be able to hold up, but still, you know, he should be fine at third. You know, the kind of a wild card guy is Rougned Odor, their second baseman. Great talent, great demeanor, fiery kid, kind of rushed to the big leagues last year, a little bit rough around the edges, still needs some polish. You know, right now he's batting ninth in the lineup, you know, or maybe eighth, depending on how Jeff Bannister wants to do it. But you never know with this kid. If he has kind of a breakout year, he could have a much bigger impact at the plate than people realize because he can swing the bat. He's got some offensive tools.
And one of the things you and I have talked about since we started doing these podcasts is the depth of quality starting pitching. Not proven. You know, Nick Martinez is not proven. Nick Pepish is not proven. Anthony Renato is not proven. But they have a lot of arms to choose from. I mean, and I know maybe it's spring training optimism, but I can see in my mind how this is a very competitive rotation going forward. But you know, obviously we don't know. What's your read on the Rangers' rotation going into the season now?
Yeah, again, Richard, it's something we talked about last week. You brought up Alex Gonzalez. You know, in past years, this is a guy they would have pushed into the starting rotation. You know, it's only been in the professionals for 2 years, but, you know, this guy's got great talent. But they don't have to do that this year because they like a Nick Martinez. They like Nick Tepish. You know, Ross Detweiler, you know, has pitched very well in camp. So they've got, you know, Anthony Renato. They've got guys that can, you know, fill the spots in the rotation where they don't have to rush a guy like Alex Gonzalez. So I think the Rangers did a pretty fair job of amassing more pitching talent and more pitching depth than they have in the past.
And another spot that is changing is the catching position. How do you see Chirinos? Has he answered the questions so far? And is Carlos Corcoran going to start? Are they going to start the season with two? And is Carlos Corcoran the other guy?
Well, they went into camp with Carlos Corcoran being the backup to Chirinos. Now, Chirinos is a former infielder, converted to catcher, very athletic, great arm, led the league in throwing out base stealers last year. He's worked really hard on you know, handling the pitching staff, calling games. Really worked hard with Hector Ortiz, their outstanding catching instructor. And this kid is developing into a very good defensive catcher. You know, the bat's still a question mark. Same with Corcoran. You know, these guys don't have a great history of big offensive numbers. But if you look around baseball, Richard, you'll see that this, you know, not a lot of teams are just loaded at catching. I think this is, you know, this position is really down all across baseball. So I think with the Rangers, with these two guys, have it handled as well as any team in the game or in the American League. You know, obviously you'd love to have Salvador Perez or Buster Posey or Russell Martin, but not many people have that. So I think what the Rangers have is as good as anybody or good as most teams.
And are you confident that Mitch Moreland, if he's healthy, is going to have a bounce-back year and that he has answered all the questions the Rangers had about him and that he is the DH?
Nobody's really sure about Mitch Moreland. You know, he's a big key in this lineup. You know, he's had some good offensive numbers in the past. He's had a lot of injuries. You know, nobody really is sure what they're going to get with Mitch Moreland. But what the Rangers would like for him to do is just stay healthy for the whole year. And if he does that, they'll take their chances.
Yep. Great stuff. You know, I don't know that there's a team in baseball that you can see. You can look at the Rangers and see 90-plus wins. You can look at them and say, well, if this goes wrong and this wrong, 90-plus losses, and we're glad you're there to chronicle it. Great stuff as always, TR. We'll talk to you soon.